You're now listening to Sound Talent Media. Check out more shows at soundtalentmedia.com.
This is the Jabberjaw Podcast Network. Visit jabberjawmedia.com for more shows like this one.
At IKEA, your dream home is a blue bag away. No matter the size of your space or budget, we've got everything you need to turn your dreams into reality. And now with new lower prices on hundreds of our most popular products, bringing the dream home is even easier. Like the gray Strandom wing chair, was $369, now $299. And the IKEA Plus 365 9-piece cookware set was $129.99, now $89.99. And hundreds more. Shop new lower prices at ikea-usa.com today.
What does motion sound like? With Kizik Hands Free Shoes, it sounds a little something like this. Experience the magic of motion. Get a free pair of socks with your first order at kizik.com/socks.
Hey there, it's Blasco, and this is A New Level. Welcome to episode 7. My guest today is Scott Lee. Scott is the co-owner of the VIP ticketing company SoundRink. He is also the co-owner of Modern Empire Management, where he guides the careers for such artists such as Jason Richardson, Kublai Khan, Currents, Enterprise Earth, and many others. Scott is also the founder of the New England Metal and Hardcore Festival and was the producer for its first 16 years. He is a longtime colleague, and I'm super stoked that he took the time to chat with me today. Scott, thank you, my friend.
Hey, no problem, buddy. How you doing?
I am doing well. I'm currently sitting in a hotel room in Buenos Aires, Argentina, so things could be much, much worse.
Fuck yeah, that's sick.
So look, I feel like, you know, I've known you for quite a while, and I don't remember where we first met or first connected, but I'm going to think it was probably maybe in the metalcore Ozfest heyday, maybe somewhere around that time period.
Yeah, I think John Fenton introduced us, to be honest with you, back in the day. I think it was either in Hartford or Mansfield, you know, the Boston, the Ozfest and stuff back then, but. And then I think we definitely hooked up again at the Palladium when you played with, it was either with Zombie or Zach, I don't remember which, but we started became better friends then, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Now, in the Ozfest era, you were managing bands then. I mean, you still manage bands, but you were managing bands on Ozfest, right?
Yeah. I mean, I believe we had All That Remains on there. I think that was the only one that we had then. And, you know, other than, you know, Shadows Fall definitely did it and stuff like that. We worked with them in the past and stuff. So, yeah, that's basically, I think those two, then, you know, then I also managed Job for a Cowboy, and they did the Mayhem Festival. Plus they did, I think Job did pre us managing them. They did Ozfest, I believe, too. So I think we had three or four bands definitely on Ozfest.
Wow, that's awesome. So look, you know, let's back it up. How did you get started in the music business?
How I got started. Basically, I had a bunch of friends that, you know, were in, you know, glam rock bands or punk rock bands, hardcore bands, metal bands. We all have, you know, the high school bands and stuff like that. And, you know, I did a show here or there, or I just was like, you know, hung out with them, just wanted to hang out with the cool kids. You know, they're in the band, smoke weed, smoke cigarettes, drink beer, blah, 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 play metal music. And then helped them do shows, loaded their gear. You know, then they started playing clubs and started going, hanging out in the clubs with them. And all of a sudden I was like, you know, this guy who could help doing production. And then I started doing my own shows and in clubs and working with people like John Peters. And he found me and basically said, okay, cool, here you go. My man, you're going to start doing local shows and start doing all this stuff. And I did like a whole bunch of local shows, booking and this, that, and the other thing. And started booking bands like, you know, like Aftershock and bands like Slowpoke and doing all these like, you know, punk rock shows and stuff. And then Aftershock turned, you know, members would join Killswitch Engage and doing this stuff. And I was booking like Hatebreed and Killswitch Engage and doing this stuff back in Pearl Street in Northampton. You know, going back to like, you know, the beginning of it all, just people just helped me doing it. Like this woman, Gina Migliosi, who she works with Overkill, and She also worked for Mass Concerts. She was one of the first people that helped me get involved in the business. And she introduced me to John Peters, who got me into the booking game of producing and, you know, booking shows and stuff. My first real show that I booked, like a national act that I'll say booking, was like with John Peters, was Murphy's Law. And yeah, we did like 300, 400 people downstairs at Pearl Street. It was crazy. We had some great times there. But that's basically how I got started.
So give me the origin of the New England Metal and Hardcore Fest. Like, I know that was all you, right? It was your thing. You created it. You invented it. Now, what was the reasoning? Like, did it feel like there was a gap? Like, did it feel like, you know, putting together something as monumental as this festival and as long running as it's been? Like, did it feel like the temperature of what was going on in your neck of the woods just needed something like this?
Well, this is like how it went down. I took Shadows Fall to the Milwaukee Metal Fest. They played first on a second stage, side stage, or whatever. We were kind of like, you know, pushed around. We're nobody band. The band was nobody then. It was da da da. We were just trying to get our name out, and we were like walking around and like handing out CDs to people, and it was just like, it was kind of miserable. You know what I mean? Nothing against Jack Hoschick. He was a really fine guy. It just didn't seem like it was a good vibe. So Matt Michon from Shadows Fall was like, we're driving back from Cleveland in Milwaukee, and he's like, you could do this. You should do one of these festivals, this big of a metal festival type thing. So I went to John Peters, who just recently at that point started booking, you know, the Palladium, Mass Concert, started booking the Worcester Palladium, and I was like, yo, I want to do this festival, and I went to this, and I want to try to do this here. And he's like, and we created a second room in the foyer of the upstairs to the Palladium. I went to town, and I just booked this festival and like worked with all these agents. I'm like, yeah, I'm going to do this thing called the New England Metal and Hardcore Festival. They didn't give it a fancy name, just gave it what it was. And I brought different types of bands like in the metal world into it. You know what I mean? It was great. Yes, I do. I think the New England area needed something like that at that time. Yeah, I do. I think it was a great thing for them. I think the New England metal and hardcore scene itself, you had bands like Overcast, Hatebreed, all these bands that were like metal bands that, you know, they were shredding, but they had a hardcore ethics to it. And that's where like the metalcore type of scenario came from in the New England area. You got bands like Converge playing with Entombed, Hatebreed playing with Machine Head back in the day. You know, it's like it was a really cool vibe. And the New England scene engulfed it. They loved their metal and they loved their hardcore. And you put it all together, and that's where you got the New England Metal and Hardcore Festival. And it worked very, very well.
How many days was the very first one, and who was the headliner?
It was 3 days. We were very gully in the beginning.
Wow.
Deicide was one of the headliners. Man of War was one of the headliners. God, who was Gwar? Oh yeah, it was a great time. We had no formula. We didn't know what the hell we were doing with it. You know what I mean? Put a bunch of bands together. We had like a foyer. One of the side rooms was the catering area. We had beans, you know, baked beans with hot dogs and hamburgers. That was the catering. We didn't know what we were doing. It was like, this is great, cool. We tried. We put together a formula and just made it work over the years. And you know, we had some great years. You know, there was like, you know, we had Megadeth played it, headlined it 1 year. It was awesome. What we did with this Blasco was, you know, you had the Ozfest or the Mayhem or whatever, but we took this festival in this room that holds 2,300 people, and we shot a DVD and we made it look like a European festival. It made it look like bigger than life. We tried. Everybody wanted to play it, and then you get there, it's like, oh, there's only 2,000 people can come in this place. You know what I mean? It's like we made it look like it was huge. And like, I think it was so lucky, but to have like the bands like Overcast, Killswitch Engage, all those, you know, Shadows Fall, All That Remains, Unearth, all these bands that come from this area, that's what helped it. The scene itself of New England helped it. The death metal scene in New England was great. The metal scene in New England was great. The hardcore scene in New England's always been great. That's what helped the New England Metal and Hardcore Festival be what it is.
What would you consider your greatest achievement?
Oh man, I 16 years of Metal Fest, Acacia Strain DVD shoot sold out at the Worcester Palladium. I went with the band to Australia, Acacia Strain to Australia. They were supporting Suicide Silence Day to Remember in Parkway Drive there. We set this huge show up. We're shooting a DVD. Dave Brodsky from My Good Eye was shooting it. It was awesome. We're like, we just want to get 1,000 people. That's our goal, was to get 1,000 people. Well, you know, we got off the plane for, you know, from Australia, which was 5 days before the show was, and we were already at that 1,000 mark. Next day, we sold out the whole thing at 2,300 people, and it was one of the greatest shows I've ever seen in my life. You know, it's like Casey Strain, Red Cord, Thy Will Be Done, Shipwreck. It was great. It was awesome. And that's one of the greatest shows I ever done. That's definitely a crowning achievement there. But I think doing, you know, 16 years of, you know, doing the New England Metal Hardcore Fest, that's one of the crowning achievements. You know, working with a lot of great bands. Like, you know, I helped produce the Killswitch Engage DVD. That's a really cool thing. They gave me a gold DVD for that. That was really cool. It's on my wall. I mean, I just think working with a lot of great people and a lot of great bands, it's definitely, you know, and making a living doing something I love.
Agreed, man. Agreed. So conversely, how about one misstep that you encountered along the way that you learned from?
Be careful who you trust. I wish I thought about I always had ideas, and then all of a sudden people would take them. I wouldn't share them, but I should have put them out there more. You know what I mean? Like, you know, different like festival ideas or tour ideas or something like that. I wish I started Soundrake earlier. That's one thing.
okay, so check this. What is your best piece of advice for someone who is working towards a career in the music business?
Stay humble and work hard. I mean, that's one of the reasons why I am where I am right now. You know, doing what I'm doing is because I worked my ass off. Work hard, you know, and love the job, you know, and try to keep your nose to the ground. To the grind. It's like, this whole thing is a grind, you know. It's like, everything that we do in this business is you're throwing something against the wall. Hopefully it sticks, or hopefully it works. You know, it's like trying to, you know, developing bands or selling tickets or putting on shows or whatever. It's a crapshoot, but it's all in the hard work and in the passion for it. Love it. Engulf yourself into it and be humble about it. You know?
Yeah. I mean, you know, I feel like a lot of people get scared at the idea of whenever we say, like, you know, it's a lot of hard work. I mean, it is, because if it was easy, everybody would be doing it, right? But like, you know, it's like, it's not hard work if you love what you're doing. And at some point, and I feel like you might echo the sentiment, but like at some point early on, it's hard because you don't know necessarily what you're doing and you're kind of figuring it out along the way. But even though hard work is a daunting thought, right? It quickly becomes something that is easy because you realize how much fun you're having, right? And it just becomes less difficult and more fun. Therefore, even though it is hard work, because it's like you're stressed because it's all on you, right? Like you're not just collecting a paycheck every day from the man, right? Like you have to get up and you have to be the man. And that's what's hard about it, but it's fun as well.
Yeah. I mean, owning your own business, you are the boss of your own business. You own your own business. You're going out there and grinding and putting everything, and you're going to fail. There, you know, 8 out of 10 times, ideas or things are going to fail. You can't be scared of failing either. You know, and I think one of the things is like, okay, cool. I'm a person that barely graduated high school, went to a half a semester of college, and now I own three companies. You know, I own 2 houses. I'm doing really well in life, and it's all because of music. And I don't even know how to fucking play a goddamn lick on guitar. I don't know how to play drums. I don't know how to do anything. I just sunk myself into it and put, like, okay, I got to do this. I'm going to put this show together so I could do this. I'm going to work with this band, and I'm going to put this band's record out, and I'm going to sell this record, and I'm going to get this band bigger. And that was my mentality, putting all of it together and working out angles of this. I mean, part of my, you know, it was funny. I was talking to Cody DeLong, my partner in the beginning, starting SoundRank. It's like, okay, cool. I'm going to book this band's show at the Palladium. I'm going to have a band on the tour, and then we're going to get the VIP ticketing for SoundRank. I'm going to have a trifecta. That's what I tried to do on everything. And like in putting it on perspective of work, it's just like, that's how you got to think. You got to think of how you can make everything work together and work hard in developing everything you do.
And to be clear, right, this is all because of music, but it's all because of heavy ass music.
I mean, the first cassette I got was an AC/DC cassette. I forgot what record it was. My friend taped it. You know what I mean? And, you know, cassette trading. You know what I mean? Back in the day.
Yeah.
And he's like, hey man, you need to listen to this. You like all these heavier stuff, like blah blah blah. I'm like, cool. And I'm like, I fell in love with that. Then I fell in love with Kiss. Then I fell in love with Black Sabbath. And it's like, that's how it all works. It's heavy music.
Yes, yes. So my next question, what is your unique strength?
My hard work and my work ethic, definitely. I get up at 5:30 in the morning and I go to the gym and I answer all my emails while I'm on a treadmill. And leave the gym, and I try to make as many phone calls as people are up in the morning on my way home, take a shower, and start my day, you know, at 9:30 in the morning, basically. And I'm done working at 10 o'clock at night. It's my work ethic, you know, and I think my relationships that I've built, that's a big thing. That's a big thing for anybody in any type of business. Keep building great relationships. I mean, shit, if I didn't have a relationship with you, I wouldn't be on this really cool podcast, you know, talking about this stuff, you know? And it's like, I think that's one of my also key points. Everybody likes me. I'm a really great guy.
Yeah. Well, I mean, look, relationships, and then you got to follow that up with reputation, right? Because the name Scott Lee has a good reputation in this business.
Yeah, I hope so. One would hope so. You know,
I'm telling you, it does. So, all right. What are you most fired up about right now?
Well, there's a few things. I'm fired up with a lot of the bands that I'm working with, like Currents, Phineas, Enterprise Earth, Kublai Khan, who's on Warp Tour. There's a lot of great things that are going on right now. Within the Ruins, the other band that I manage, just got a new singer. But there's this band from Texas that I just started working with called I Am. You should really check them out. They're a cross between, you know, a little bit of death metal, a little straight metal, hardcore, but it's all from Texas. Their music, you'd love it, Blasco. A lot of dive bombs, a lot of shredding. It's just great. But, you know, that's one thing I'm really excited about. I'm excited about, you know, how SoundRank's developed and how it's become a very strong foothold in the community of metal, or, you know, in the concert community. You know, it's like doing VIP ticketing, and how we've, Cody and myself and Jason Majun and everybody's taken this company and brought it to the where it is right now. I'm really excited about that. You know, it's, I'm just excited about music itself in general. You know, it's like the heavy metal community right now is great. I mean, you got bands like Fit for an Autopsy just signing to Nuclear Blast Records, which is great. You know, different types of, you know, music going out there. It's like the death metal world is awesome right now. It's like, you know, bands like Ingested are touring and coming to the States. It's really cool. I mean, I just like, I don't know. I think I'm just really excited about heavy music right now in general. I think with the whole streaming sites and all this stuff, all you got to do is go on a computer and you can stream. You know, it's like you go to Spotify, you listen to this band. Oh, what's the related band to this? Oh, you can listen to this band from this. Oh, they sound really cool. You know, it's like and that's what makes music now so much cooler. I think everybody, like, you know, it's like I love the fact like vinyl and records and all that stuff is cool and everything like that. But the way streaming sites, people find music, I mean, a lot easier now, and they enjoy it a lot more, I think, too. People are still buying the records. They're still buying the albums. They want that tangible item still. And that's why I think the vinyl market is still doing very well. But I think it's like if people turn on to different music through the streaming sites.
Yeah, and I think that's a good segue into the next question, which is, what is your one prediction for the future of the music business?
My prediction for the music business, I think you're going to see a lot more management companies putting out records and doing records themselves for their artists. And I think we're going to see a lot more artists, bigger artists, that is, doing their own records, if that makes sense, putting out their own music, you know what I mean? And not utilizing the label in a sense, you know?
Does it get to a point, you think, where no one can be more passionate about a band than the band itself, right?
Correct.
It's always good to have partners that are equal in their enthusiasm, but I feel like you're right that more bands will take the responsibility themselves to produce and manufacture and distribute their own records, because who better to do it? You know, I mean, like you can't always put, like, I understand that there needs sometimes to be this sense of validation, right? Like an artist, a band, they need to know that someone else is as passionate about what they do, and it provides them some validation that someone else wants to be involved in their business. But I feel like I agree with you that will over time eventually start to go away, because it's like, hey, look, why am I giving up a piece of my business, right? It's like, this, my band is my business. Why am I giving a piece of it for the simple sake of validation?
I mean, don't get me wrong. There are great record labels out there, you know what I mean, that work hard for their artists. And there's also great managers out there that work hard for their artists too. But I think it's going to combine itself into, like, you're going to see a lot, like I said, a lot more management companies or managers working with the artists to self-release or to do creative releases. I think we'll never lose the record label per se, but I think we'll just always, there's going to be more creative things to doing this. I think there's going to be a lot more, okay, cool, label A, you know, and label B are going to do more things together, like combine, maybe do more split 7-inches or to that nature, you know what I mean? Where it's like, or, you know, this band's going to be on this label, but they're going to be able to do creative, like, okay, cool. Between our releases, we can do 2 singles or our own 7-inch and release it that way. So that will be part of the deals in the future too. You know what I mean? So that way they can generate money on their own and put out on their own type of scenario. And the band can choose how to put out the record. You know what I mean? Or put out those 2 songs in between the cycle of that record per se. Does that make sense to what I'm saying?
Yeah, totally. Okay, so put on your manager hat. Let's run a hypothetical that Scott Lee, the manager, and his management company are open to taking on new management clients, in a developmental stage, meaning like you're going to take on a band that's at the developmental level. What qualities do you look for in a new client from a developing band?
Just heart. I mean, that's one of the good, I mean, talent and heart, you know. It's like, you know, it was funny. I had a friend of mine came to me and said, hey, my kid's got a band and he wants to do this. He wants to do what you do. Can you talk to him? And I'm like, yeah, I'll sit down and talk to him. I'm like, and I sat down and talked to all his friends and I was like, so what do you want to do? He's like, they're like, we want to go out on tour. We want to play our music. We want to do this. I'm like, you know, I was like, okay, cool. You know, it's like, what do you have to offer, you know, to make yourself different from everybody else? That's what I look for. I look for if there's something different, if there's something like music, obviously your music has to be good. You know what I mean? That's one thing. Without music, it's nothing. You know what I mean? And then looking at the people too, if they're good human beings, you got to work with good human. I like working with good human beings. I don't want to work with like anybody. Like, and then the other thing is like, you know, just making sure they're level-headed, people that are level-headed and like knowing that this is a business. You have to build your business from the ground up. So basically looking for talent, you know, making sure the music's good, making sure everybody gets what's going on, you know, they know how to play their instruments and looks good and all that stuff. And then making sure people are good people and not douchebags, you know, in the sense.
Yeah, I mean, how much stock do you put in a band's social media following in the beginning stages, right? Like in some ways, it's a good indicator as to the fact that people are digging their music and people are engaging with it. And not only that, but the band is putting effort into that aspect of their business, and it's working.
Yeah, I mean, a lot. I mean, definitely, you know, that's definitely, yeah, definitely looking at that. I mean, if the band's hungry and they want to push it and they want to, you know, go out there and like grind and you see what they're trying to do, that definitely, you definitely take that in contention, you know, and put that. You know, if they're putting their social media looks good and they look good and there's a good package there, that's what you're looking for. And obviously the music, like I said.
What would be a new level for SoundRink, right? And because it's like, I talked to Cody, because I've been using SoundRink for a while now, right? And I've used other VIP companies and, you know, to varying degrees, but I've successfully been using SoundRink for a while now. I mainly talk to Cody, so I'm sharing this info with you now in case he doesn't, you know, share my sentiment with him. You know, but like here's a thought on like VIP companies in general, right? There is some narrative that people don't like it. You know, they think it's not fair. You know, they think maybe the band should just be going to the merch booth after the shows rather than charging people to meet them, right? In defense of VIP companies in general, right? Like, what's your stance on anyone that has a negative outlook on the VIP experience?
I mean, look, here's it's also depending on the band and the ethics of the band itself or the group or whatever. But my stance on it is like this. If you're a super fan, you know, this is the great VIP ticketing is the greatest thing in the world for you. You know, you get to meet these people, talk to them. Sometimes they don't come out and hang out with the fans or go to the merch table or they can't. This gives the people the opportunity to do it. It's as long as it's organized and people are doing it the right way and like, you know, the meet and greets are going smooth and having a good time with it. I mean, there's nothing wrong with it. There's nothing wrong with it whatsoever. You're going to go to a concert, and you're going to go to a concert, and you're going to pay $20 for parking. You're going to pay for T-shirt. You're going to pay for, you know, a couple drinks or a hot dog, whatever. It's an event any way you look at it. So why not enhance the event? Meet the people you're going to go see. Get a signature. Hang out with them. Have a conversation. You know, whatever. It's like, take a picture with them. It's a great thing. You get, it's a crowning achievement for a fan to meet the artists, you know? It's not for every band. I get it. But take the situation of, like, getting a chance to meet people and having a good time and doing this and meeting the people you look up to. I think it's awesome. I don't think it's a bad thing whatsoever.
How does the VIP experience get bigger and better, right? The kids are going to the shows, they're meeting the band, but like, where can it go? You know, how far can we push the envelope of an experience for these people?
I think you can push it as far as the artist is going. You know, it's like one of the things that we talk about, you know, myself and Cody and Jason talk about is like, how do we, you know, create packages, creating different types of things where it's like, all right, cool, we get, you know, so, you know, we're doing a package for this band. What are they into? Are they into, you know, weightlifting, or do they talk about this? What do they want to do? You know what I mean? We get creative with the bands, and because the bands know their fans better than anybody, you know what I mean? So to put in perspective, it's like, all right, cool. We're going to do, you know, we talk to the bands or whatever, and we're going to put together this package. Some of the bands are workout bands. We want to do this type of thing for them or whatever, you know? It can get bigger. The meet and greets and all the experience and everything to that nature can get bigger and better with the creative minds of what we're doing. We're creating everything what we're doing. There's no boundaries for it. We can, you know, we like to do different things where it's like, hey, I mean, like pizza parties or different types of scenarios. We've done things where, you know, we had listening parties for where people would go take limo ride, meet up at meet and greets, and then take limo rides to studios and listen to unheard music while drinking Dom Perignon. You know what I mean? There's no realm. There's nothing outside the box. You know, everything's outside the box. We want to be more creative. We want to be more things. So the sky's the limit is what I'm saying.
Okay. So look, Scott, thanks for joining me. My last question is the most important question. Living or dead, who are the members of your ultimate supergroup?
All right. Guitar, Dimebag Darrell. Neil Peart, drums.
Okay.
Okay, you got Scott Ian's rhythm guitar, by the way. So you got Dimebag and Scott Ian, Neil Peart, and then you got Rob Halford. Rob Halford's my singer. There it is. That's my singer. There's nobody else. I was going to say Randy Blythe or Bruce LePage or something to that nature, or even Jamie Josta, you know, but you can be the bass player. That's for sure.
I'll join that band. I'll join that band for sure, man. That'd be awesome. You know, we just did a gig with Judas Priest, and dude, let me tell you, Halford's never sounded better. It's amazing. He is crushing.
I went to the show at the Worcester Palladium, and I was just like, and Glenn Tipton came out and everything for like the last four or five songs, which was great. And I was just like, Halford. Woo! He got it. He still got it, man. That guy is no joke. I've been, you know, a fan of Judas Priest. That was, you know, remember the argument when you were a kid between Judas Priest or Iron Maiden? Judas Priest or Iron Maiden? I was like, I was a Judas Priest guy. I mean, I like Iron Maiden. Don't get me wrong, but it's like, man, I you know, Screaming for Vengeance, Defender of the Faith. That's when I started getting into that, the Judas Priest. But yeah, Rob Halford's a god. He's just a god.
He is the man. I'll tell you a real quick story that my 15-year-old self has a high level of difficulty believing that it even happened. But here I am hanging out in the dressing room. In walks Ozzy. Ozzy's, you know, we're just shooting the shit, hanging out. And then in walks Halford. And those guys start carrying on a conversation. And here's my 15-year-old self looking at the state of what is happening in front of me and doesn't believe it for a second. You know, two of the greatest singers in my world, right, are just like hanging out, shooting the shit, talking about Birmingham and smoking cigarettes. Like, it's crazy.
Oh, I would have loved being a fly on the wall for that, man. That's great. God, that's so cool. That's a great story.
So look, Scott, thanks for hanging out. How do our listeners follow you, contact you on the social medias?
Scott Lee 26 on Facebook and Instagram.
Awesome. And then do you have a website for the management company and SoundRink, et cetera, et cetera?
SoundRink.com and ModernEmpireManagement.com.
Thanks, Scott. I super appreciate it, man. This was awesome.
Hey, man, anything for you, Blasco. You're the best.
A New Level podcast is brought to you by Musicians Institute. Headphones provided by Monster Products. Editing and music by Blake Bunzel. Logo design by Mango Beard. I produced this show with my managemental co-host from the other coast, Mr. Mike Mowry for Jabberjaw Media. Email me questions or comments at askblasco@gmail.com. Thanks for listening.
Hello, everybody. I'm Bruce.
And I'm Nolan. And this is the Corner of Gray Street Podcast. As longtime Dave Matthews Band fans, we set out to create a podcast to dive deep into the past, present, and future of DMB.
Not only do we recap and review shows within an ongoing tour, but we revisit past shows from throughout the band's history, conduct interviews with a wide variety of guests with ties to DMB, and create unique and exclusive content like our Concerts on the Corner series.
Whether you're a fan of the band or just a fan of great music, we think you'll find something you'll enjoy. We can't wait to see you on the Corner of Gray Street.
Hey, this is Chris Swinney, formerly of the Ataris and currently host of That One Time on Tour, part of the Sound Talent Media Podcast Network. Have you ever wondered what it's really like on the road? The highs can be euphoric, but the lows can be crushing. Join me every week as I chat with industry pros about what it's like living out their wildest dream and, in some cases, their worst nightmare. Past guests of the show include members of NoFX, Pennywise, Bad Religion, and more. Listen and subscribe at SoundTalentMedia.com.
This is the Jabberjaw Podcast Network.